Hello there, neighbors, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. We're recording right now at the Little Ranch House Studio on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. Show number 136, October 12th, 2005. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining. All, of course, designed with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the show, ladies and gentlemen, Don Shaw.
Well, it sure is good to be here today, Mr. Tom. We're all together again.
You better believe it. It's good to have you here, Don Patterson.
Go Astros.
You got it.
They got to play St. Louis, so we'll, you know.
Well, my name is Tom Houston. Here he is, folks, the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show, old birthday boy himself, Phil Parr.
Howdy, folks.
Howdy, neighbor.
How long has it actually been? I guess the week of the storm we did a show, right?
I was here for number 132 and 134. I think I was catching the even numbers. What number is this?
This is 136, so you're still catching the even. But 134 was done before the storm came through. And the storm came through on the, 24th?
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
It did. It was the 24th. I know it
so
was.
So it's been almost a month since we've been together, hasn't it? 3 weeks at least.
Yeah. Certainly
has. Yep. Here we are, all gathered around our microphones.
Now, we bailed out on you last week, didn't we?
You did.
To a man.
Well, Astros were on. I understood that. The Astros were on, and they're in hot competition, and they're playing St. Louis tonight. What do you think, guys? What do you think they can get by St. Louis?
Oh, I don't know about tonight. They've got their Carpenter, isn't it, Patterson?
Carpenter and Pettit.
And
if Pettit's on and Carpenter's on, it'll be a really good game.
It'll be a close game.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying you think they can get by the series. What is it, best of five?
Need to win one of these.
No, this is four out of seven, isn't it?
Yeah, four out of seven. But we need to take one of the two in St. Louis to come home with one victory.
We
need one at least.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. So you figure eventually we'll be having the World Series on Thanksgiving morning, you think, right?
It looks that way.
Man, it just keeps getting later. I remember this was all long gone for by my birthday. And now here's my birthday, and we're still in the playoffs, you know?
You know, that would be years if they were playing like this time of the year up north, a team from up north. Goodness gracious, there'd be snow on the ground, you know?
There could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very easily.
It snows in St. Louis. I guess not in October, though, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
Do they not have a roof on Busch Stadium?
I don't think so.
Does Harry
Carey still do that? I think they're fixing to tear that stadium down.
Harry
Carey's
dead.
Well, his son, I hate that.
Well, and his son, his son used to do the Braves, and now I think, did he go to Chicago? Did Skip Carey go to Chicago now after his dad passed away?
Don't get me to lie. I'm not sure.
I don't know who does the St. Louis Cardinals.
And did you say that my father-in-law told me today that Milo Hamilton is retired?
He will do only the home games next year. Alan Ashby will go on the road. That's kind of what they're doing with Larry Durker. He does color when they're at home on TV, and then Jim Deshays goes on the road.
And they're going to put someone. Lynn Ashby's going to do the on the road game. He'll be the actual play-by-play guy on the road games.
Alan Ashby. He's been working, you know, for 3 or 4 years with Milo. He didn't quite have his. You know, he's nobody. There's only one Milo, but Alan's not bad. He's learned his craft fairly well.
You know, one thing that's good about these are our Astros announcers, Milo Hamilton and Alan Ashby. I keep wanting to call him Lynn.
There's
Ashby.
A writer, editorialist
in the Houston Chronicle. Yeah. Lynn Ashby. This is Alan Ashby. He and Milo seem to have a good rapport. I mean, they really seem to like each other genuinely.
I think they do. Yeah.
As respect for the old man, Milo Hamilton. Reminds me so much of my father talking.
He is the last of the really great announcers.
Old announcers, isn't he?
He came up in, in the 50s, I guess, with doing Pittsburgh Pirate or St. Louis. I'm not sure that he did not do a stint in St. Louis.
He may have, but I'm not sure.
Pittsburgh forever.
We will hear, "Holy Toledo!"
Yeah. You know,
I love him. I love him.
You've got to love him.
You do. We listen to radio and watch TV Sunday. And so we discovered Saturday night that the radio is about 5 seconds ahead of the television.
Right.
Really? So John was, we were out on the patio listening to radio, and he'd stick his head in and go, "I think it's going to be a ball. He's going to strike him out, I bet." And then it would happen, you know. How in the hell did they? You know. So his son was going to a party, so he gave him a transistor radio and a little earplug so he could probably make some money, you know. Anyway, we're the Blind Handy Band, and it's Phil's birthday, and I'm 65 years old today. I'm proud of every minute of it.
Happy birthday.
Were you not born in St. Louis?
I was born in St. Louis, Missouri. I was.
I thought you were.
Born in 1940 in St. Louis, Missouri. We moved to San Antonio when I was 2 years old, so I've been at Texan most of my life, about 63 years. Anyway, we had a storm came through here called, wasn't Katrina, but it was
Rita
came through here and really produced some serious winds. I have no idea how bad the winds were, but we had a lot of damage, and we were out of power for, Tom, 90 hours, right?
90. Yes, 90 hours for me. Yeah.
And I think Patterson got it back first, and Shaw was about the same. Shaw got it the same night you did. We were out about 72 hours. But during this storm, some interesting things happened. And this is not a storm-related story. But Don, of course, as you all know, has just built a pool and is now in the process of resodding his yard. Is that correct?
That is
again.
Correct.
And the guy brought the grass on the trailer, and take it from there.
Well, I don't know if you've seen a pallet of grass, but anyway, if it was down on the ground, or it's usually on a pallet, on a wooden skid, it would probably be up to your chest, and it's probably, I don't know, 3.5-4 feet wide by four. Just say 4 by 4 by 4.
Okay.
Yeah. But it weighs a bunch.
I bet.
And three pallets was on this big metal tandem trailer, probably 18 feet long, and he had, you know, one in the front, one in the center, and one at the rear. And so, not really thinking about it, because it's a tandem trailer, which means, you know, you got four tires down on the ground.
Yeah.
So I was just taking grass off, wasn't paying attention. And so I wound up taking the one in the front off, sitting on the nose. And so when I was messing around, I was fixing to move to another pallet. The trailer jumped off the little board that he had the little crank down thing on the tongue holding it up. It just jumped off that board. And I said, I guess we're a little light in the front. I better take the one off of the rear and then kind of balance it out. So
you stepped up there.
I jumped up on the trailer, and at this time we were like 40 feet from the swimming pool. Well, there was a little hill there. The next thing I know, the trailer and grass and I were mobile, as you said.
Rolling toward the pool
ever so slowly at first, and then it picked up. And I said, well, you couldn't. How will I stop this thing? So, and as I leapt to safety, crashing and burning and cutting my leg, I was trying, I was trying to figure out what I would tell Emily. How would I explain that the trailer and three pallets of grass
are in the pool?
But I guess it was just my weight had made the difference. It's what set sail. It's what caused us to set sail. And when I jumped off, the tongue kind of burrowed up in the ground and stopped about 15 feet from the pool. So we rolled a good 25 or 30 feet.
The thing to have done is if it rolled in the pool, it'd just been to have filled it up. Right?
Well, or just gone down with the trailer.
Really?
But think of the great noise it would have made.
For an instance, it was a scary situation. In fact, after I jumped off, I really tried to stop the trailer, and there was no way, and then it burrowed up in the ground. But it was kind of humorous after I backed off and thought about it, put a little methylate on my cut.
Well, anyway, that isn't storm related, but I think it's a great. So I could just see, because the first thing you thought about was, what am I going to tell
you? Yeah, I mean, that was number one thing on my mind.
It wasn't, I'm going to lose the grass or I'm going to get hurt. It's, what the hell am I going to tell Emily?
Yeah, how am I going to explain this? Sometimes, you know, I figure I'm on borrowed time around there anyway, you know.
$600 electric bill. But, Tommy, go ahead.
Okay, this one says, hi, folks. We just had a new slider installed leading onto the deck off the kitchen. I determined that I'll take care of this one, maintaining the track. The problem is, I don't know how. Is there a way to keep these tracks clean that's superior to other ways? Is there a particular lubricant which should be applied ever so often? How often? Thanks, Barry.
Well, let's get Gordon Vick's response to this question.
Yeah, that would be
good. He said put some dry lubricant in it, as in graphite.
Mm-hmm.
Would be...
Yeah.
I have no idea who that is. That's we can't answer that. But anyway, it put some dry lubricant like graphite powder. You can go to the hardware store and buy graphite powder in a little tube, and the thing to do would be just empty the tube in the track would be all I'd know to do. And you can clean the track if it gets too bad with a screwdriver or with a little metal. The last time I did it with a metal scratch pad. You know, they make scratch pads now in metal and they make them little Teflon.
Yeah.
It's good, like you'd wash your dishes with.
Yeah.
I just cleaned it with that, and the next post is pretty on target, Tom.
Oh, the what?
The next post, the thing after that. I read that.
Oh, you did? Okay, all right. Yeah, Bryce did comment on it.
Yes.
And he said, I usually clean the tracks every few months or whenever I feel any resistance when opening the door. Vacuuming the tracks weekly help as well. Don't use any lubricants. Dirt and dust just adhere to them. Bryce.
Well, and he's right, because we put WD-40 on it, and that door is it's all right if you open it all the way and close it, but if it's it'll never be. And I'm just going to leave it and sell the house.
Yeah.
Can't worry about that. Anyway, don't spray WD-40 or any of those kind of things, because dirt will adhere to it, and you'll just make it worse. Dry lubricant. That's Gordon Vick said.
There was a question on the list about whether to leave your computer on or off.
Yep.
And so this is kind of a comment to that, but then a question on something else.
All right.
So I'll just read the whole thing. It says, hi, Jay. That shouldn't be an option as to wear on your computer parts if you leave it on all the time. Just because it's on all the time, you can set the power options to turn the monitor off at a given time. For example, after 30 minutes, if you're not using the computer, and the hard drive after 15 minutes, again, if you're not using it. There's also standby mode, which is something I do all the time. My laptop is always on standby mode, whether I'm going to use it in a couple of minutes or a couple of hours. I always leave it on standby. I have to admit, and I didn't know this. This was something new to me. I get into a great deal of trouble with my bank because of their website admonishes you if your computer has been on for more than 24 hours. They actually tell you to restart your computer, then log on. This I find intrusive. But I guess they have my best interests at heart, but I still don't understand how that affects my security on my computer.
I don't either.
I empty my cash after every visit to the bank's website, so why should it matter if my computer has been on for over 24 hours?
It shouldn't make any difference.
Anybody have any ideas on this?
Wonder how they know it.
I don't know.
No, that's...
How do they know that? I don't want to know.
It's kind of odd to me.
That is strange.
I leave my computer. I hit the standby.
I do, too. I use standby.
Mine's always on standby, of course, with the wonderful new and improved Windows XP. It takes about a week and a half for it to come up.
You know? Yeah. Well, mine, too.
it takes 30, 45 seconds for the computer to come up. I remember 98, it would just, boop, it'd be right, you know, back up. Go ahead.
Two schools of thought, and I never did hear the reasons for either, but two large institutions for which I was associated when at Texas A&M, they left all the computers on all the time. At Lufkin Independent School District, they turned them all off at the end of the day. So I never could figure out why. I like to leave them on. Mine goes into stand. If you just set a few parameters, the monitor will go off standby mode, and you know. And if the dogs bark at 2:00 in the morning, you'll go by there and see your monitor up and running. But
the dogs bark and kick it on?
No, just vibrating if they get in there rummaging around or something.
Yeah.
But other than that, mine stays on all the time.
So. Yeah.
Yes, too. I had a deal. It seemed like with Windows ME, you could just hit the space bar and it'd come right up.
Yeah,
That's what I do with XP.
Yeah.
But I don't think on standby they hardly use any power.
Well, the hard drive doesn't run. The fans don't run.
So.
The fans and the hard drive don't run. The thing about it is everything you were working on, if you're checking your email two or three times a day, which I do sometimes, then Outlook is right there. You don't have to close it and go through rebooting, because mine is missing a file in the boot section, and it'll come up, but it's hard to make it come up. So it's on standby all the time.
Just one comment on his bank page. I'm not sure if, I mean, he obviously knows what he's saying. My on the stock page, mine will, if I'm inactive, if I have the page up, and I want to say come in after 2 hours of being outside and I've left the page up and I want to go back and check a balance, it'll tell me to re-log in, that I have been inactive.
Oh, sure.
But the streamer You can get some information, but you can't get any some personal or pertinent information. But that's just. But I can imagine it in them the bank page telling him.
If I was going to leave it on, if I was going to leave it on and leave the hard drive engaged and everything running, I would unplug the network cable if I went away from it.
Yeah.
I'd just take the network cable out and plug it right back. It'd come right back up. It wouldn't. That wouldn't hurt a thing. I wouldn't leave mine on, because I don't leave mine on in the network cable. I'm scared. I don't want anybody roaming around in my computer. And that's,
well, to me, you know, talking about places to put a switch, that would be the neatest place to put a switch, Andy, right there, where instead of disconnecting you that you could just cut the network off.
Well, you could. Yeah,
guy could
go to Radio Shack, buy a little chassis, and build a little box to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll ask our buddy. We're going to talk to him a little bit about that. He'll know. Somebody probably makes one.
Probably.
I would imagine.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tommy.
Hi, folks. I'm looking for a bit of help with a problem. For many years, I've had a four-section wood-folding braille ruler, which has become a bit wobbly with regular use. I bought it from the Royal National Institute of the Blind in London. When I phoned them recently to order a new one, I was told that they're no longer available, and I would just have to buy an ordinary one locally and mark it myself. Well, this seems rather silly to me, because if I could do that with a high degree of accuracy, I'd have gone down that road anyway. I do have a talking tape measure, but that's not always suitable for the job in hand. Any ideas, Jim?
Well, yeah, that's pop riveted together, don't you imagine, Joe?
Probably.
Put those pop rivets in the vise and clamp down on them, or take a pair of pliers and clamp down on those pop rivets, and that old pop rivets.
Give them a good grip.
So just, you know, just get your pliers and clamp down on the pop rivets, and that ought to...
Yeah, or if you have a big punch that would go in that hole, and then you could tap it with a hammer.
Just tap it lightly with a hammer.
Go through it. It would, you know.
Don't tap it too hard, because you'll mess up your old braille ruler. Somebody, I bet, I'd check around the other blind sites. I bet there's somebody still makes those braille rulers.
But you know, I'm wondering, talking about the braille ruler, I had one that was my dad's that was not braille, a fold-up ruler like he's talking about, and I'm wondering if you could even buy one of them.
I don't know.
You
good
know,
question.
The mine was probably 50 or 60 years old, and I probably still have it someplace, but I don't know that I've seen one.
I mean, those rulers that just fold together and you flip them out?
Yeah.
I've got one somewhere.
I wonder if you could buy a new one of them, braille or otherwise.
Yeah, good question.
You could 5 years ago, because I bought one.
Okay.
I don't remember where. Maybe at Abney's, our wonderful Abney's. My brother had credit down there the other day, and I missed it. Anyway, our guest is a fellow that we had the pleasure of meeting in Houston, Texas last November. He came to our little gathering. His name is Max Robinson, and he's a Kentucky boy and knows a little bit about an amazing amount of things. And we'll talk to him in just a minute on the Blind Handyman Show. We'll be right back.
Best about the Blind Handyman List. Great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the Handyman List, and it worked.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman List, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman is I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. A trip to Walmart.
I wonder where the pharmacy is. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your canyon is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping the big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is blindmysmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com. This is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here is more of the show with Don Shaw.
Max, how in the world are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing just fine, Don.
Man, it's good to hear your voice again. Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah, good to hear yours, too.
And it's been, I know, way back before we went to Houston when you were on with us here last time.
That's right.
It has been a day or two, hasn't it, huh?
Yeah. Oh, there's the birthday boy.
There's the birthday boy.
Yeah.
Listen,
hi, Phil.
Listen, these birthdays ain't all they're cracked up to be, as you well know. And, I still haven't caught you yet, though.
No.
Yeah,
we're running ahead.
Yes, I won't. I'll talk to you.
I'll be 66 in a couple of months.
66?
Well, I just did 63. Hi, Max.
Hey, that's Tom.
That was Don Patterson.
Here's Tom Houston.
Here's Tom Houston. Hi, Max.
I get you guys confused.
You do. Well, you don't see us often enough.
I'm the smart, good-looking one.
Okay.
that's his wife he's talking about. What the deal is. Max is from Kentucky. Things in Kentucky about the same as always, I guess.
The weather's nice here. It's too hot. Hadn't been too cold. We need rain, but...
We need rain, and we're getting a little cool temperatures. It was about 61 when I got up this morning, which is pretty pleasant for this time of the year. Well, what did we call Max about? What are we going to talk to him about?
Faucets.
Faucets. That's
fluorescent light.
That's right, fluorescent lights.
I think
the main thing was this valve the guy was talking about, his hose that he couldn't get to work, that you push this hose and it turns the water from the actual faucet into this hose that you can spray around to different places.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell us how that valve works.
That's right.
All right. Well, you're on.
There's no connection from that lever that you push. By the way, I'm hearing my voice echo back. Are you hearing an echo on your end?
I am not.
We're fine now.
You're just as clear as a bell.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
You push the little button on the spray arm, and water starts coming out of there, and it mostly cuts off from the main spout
from your
sink. And there's no connection, there's no connection between that button you push and the valve. It's all done by pressure difference. And the thing that really makes it work is something called, at least I call it an over-center diaphragm.
Uh-huh.
So picture this. You got a disc that's springy, made out of springy metal or maybe a thick rubber that's springy. And you're going to put it inside of a ring that's got a groove cut in the inside of it that'll hold it. So you put it in this ring and the ring is adjustable. You tighten it down. This is theoretical, okay? This is not how they're actually made.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you tighten that ring down, and the diaphragm will bulge out one way or the other.
All right.
A little bit.
Okay.
Now, you can push on that on the side that's bulged out, and it will resist, but when it gets past the center, it'll pop over to the other side.
I got your point.
Okay.
Okay.
That's called an over-center device, or a toggle device. That's actually what's in a toggle switch. It's not a diaphragm. It's a rocker arm with a spring, but it's the same principle. You move it past the center, and it flips.
And it pops up the other way.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Okay. So this valve senses pressures on either side. Oh, and you can make these things. You could add a spring to it to make it real easy to push in one direction and harder to push in the other direction.
I guess you could.
But you don't have to actually add an external spring. You can just put the springiness in the diaphragm.
Okay.
Okay, so now we've got this valve that will, this diaphragm, and you can make it be a valve. You can make it cover up a hole. when it springs in one direction.
Yes, sir.
And what happens is when you're normally running water out of your sink, you know, through your faucet, the pressure in the hose builds up, and there's a little less pressure on the side that's going to the spout because that's where the water's coming out. You with me?
Yes, sir. I'm with you.
Okay. So then when you... And so that leaves the valve set to let the water come out of the faucet.
Out of the faucet.
Then when you push that button and open the end of the spray hose, you're opening the nozzle to let water flow through, there's a pressure drop on that side. And that flips the diaphragm over to the other condition. In other words, it closes off the sink.
And
lets water run out of the hose.
And the valve is where? The valve is down at the bottom of your hose or what?
Yeah, it's where the hose, it's a little unit actually. I put my kitchen sink in a while ago, or changed the faucet. And I can't remember, but it was a little unit about maybe an inch in diameter and 3 inches long that you screwed onto a manifold.
The place where that goes. The place where your hose goes.
And you put the hose on it, and you put the faucet on it, the spout on it.
So all you're doing is you're opening another way for the water to go.
Yeah.
And since the pressure of the water coming out of your faucet keeps the valve in the direction it's in normally. Am I right?
Right. Right.
Okay. And then when you allow water to go another way, that pressure is released from the faucet, and it simply pops the other way and comes out your hose.
Right. And it mostly shuts off. I tried ours the other day, and I noticed that it, when it was new, it would almost completely shut it off. But it,
now there's a little trickle, probably. I've seen
it's a big trickle. We live in limestone country up here. So it's gotten some
particles. But that's all there is to show. The deal on the end of the hose that you're doing, all you're doing is opening that hose.
That's right. You're just opening a valve on the end of the hose and relieving pressure, and then that flips the valve and makes it.
I would never, ever, if I'd taken one apart, I'd know how they worked.
But I need that part for ours.
I don't think you can get them apart intact enough to tell what's in them.
Oh, yeah.
They're not made to come apart once
they're a little sealed unit, and one side is the inside of the female, and one is a male, probably.
I can't remember, but probably.
Yeah.
Of course, it would have two outlets, one for the spout and one for the hose.
Yeah.
They are replaceable. You may have to take the whole faucet out to replace them, but they are replaceable.
Yeah, was my question. Can you buy this valve at your local hardware store?
I think you can.
We need one for our sink, in fact.
Something to try, though, is if you live in limestone country, ordinary household vinegar will dissolve limestone. It's calcium carbonate.
Yeah.
And so the person who originally asked this question said he could get in there and see the valve, but he couldn't get it out. He couldn't get at it, but... You might want to try with everything shut off. Try and pour a little vinegar in there.
Just take the end of the hose off and pour some vinegar down the hose.
Yeah, pour vinegar down the hose or pour it down the spout. Maybe both.
Yeah.
But you know, it's
work in there and dissolve that limestone if it is limestone.
You know, as things go though, the whole hose is probably not too expensive. I mean, that whole
probably isn't.
Well, the hose isn't very. That's probably not the problem in his case. It's probably the diverter valve.
Yeah, but I'm saying that might be coming as a whole unit.
Well, it might be. You may be right about that.
Yeah.
And that's what it's called. Its name is a diverter valve.
Yeah, diverter valve for a spray arm.
For a spray arm. I'll be darned. I've used those a jillion times. I just never had. I thought that the end of the hose had something to do with it, but it doesn't really. Just opening.
Relieve pressure.
All right. Well, I'm glad we cleared that up. That's good.
Yeah.
It's good we need to have people like you.
Yeah.
Who can get us over these little humps that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you think I'm never going to mail you that, but I am.
I'm still waiting.
But I know you're still waiting, and I still am. Maybe if I mention on the air, someone will call me and remind me.
Remind you.
I've got a tube-type talking book that I promised Max he can have, and it's in the storeroom. And I know exactly where it is. It's just a matter of getting it out, taking it to the post office, and shipping it to him.
That's right.
Well, we want to know if he ever got his linear cranked up.
Not yet, but a friend gave me an SB-101
wow.
to go with it.
Wow.
He bought it very cheap, he said, and he just brought it down and gave it to me.
Wow. So, well, so you got the keyer, the automatic keyer, Heath. So you're getting a whole rig.
And the 200. So all I have to do now is what I have to build is a desk to hold them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I need to work on that.
Yeah, this is a ham linear.
A ham radio rig.
Ham radio rig.
And those things that I mentioned, that's the whole 9 yards.
Well,
all you need to get on the air.
I think you told me you were running 1,000 watts already, didn't you?
Well, that's what the linear is.
That's what his linear.
The only thing I had to drive it was an HW12.
Uh huh.
75 meters only.
Uh huh.
But now I've got 5 band. Transceiver, and so I can cook now.
You can cook now. Yeah. Do you still get on and talk or not?
I haven't in a while, but I sure have the urge to.
Yeah.
I just have to build this desk.
Are you a CW man, or you talk AM phone?
I'm a phone man.
Sideband.
I never could really get the hang of that code. It just, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's not even a requirement anymore.
I know it's not. Taking it all off.
They won't. What would they, you know, Morse code was great before we had communications like we have now. It's a useless. It was a nice thing to learn. My daddy loved it and got just angry with me because I wouldn't learn it.
They've got computer programs now that will send and receive code, so you don't need to be able to read it to use it.
That's true.
And they would let you type at a keyboard, and they would translate that into code?
That's right.
See, that would be a thing. That'd be the thing to have. I wish my daddy was still alive. He'd love
that. They've had those a long time, too.
He'd love that. All right, Don, what else do we want to talk to Max about? Fluorescent lights, did you say?
Fluorescent lights, maybe, or your four-wire plug.
My
dilemma.
Four-wire dryer plug. I never did go back and fix that. We discussed that at length on the
show.
You
ought to do that, Phil, because that fourth wire is the ground for the cabinet.
That's the chassis ground.
You're running with an ungrounded cabinet.
And you sure could get shocked that way.
And you could, yeah. If a short developed in the motor or in something, or a switch or something, you could really get a zap off of that.
I guess I ought to
screw you or your
that.
Wife. So.
Well, you know, I'm not worried about her. No,
you don't worry about her. She's a lawyer.
She's home today. She could be listening neighborhood radio 100.9.
His insurance man just left as I was driving up. Increasing things.
That's right.
Yeah, I guess I ought to scoot that dryer back here, but it is so hard. It's in such a tight place, but I guess I ought to do that. I could not figure out. I had no idea they changed that, and I bought a new dryer, and here I was ready to plug it up, and you know, so I
just tie that fourth wire to the neutral. That's all you can do in your house.
Just tie it to the ground. Yeah. Are they running Romax now with two neutrals or two?
Yeah.
They're making Romax four-wire Romax now.
Four-wire Romax.
Whoa.
And that's the new, that's the new way, code. That's the way they wire everybody's house now, I guess.
That's the way you wire a 220 circuit, a 240 circuit.
Anyway. Well, yeah, this is a 220 circuit. Two hots and a neutral.
Two hots and a neutral. Now you have two hots, a neutral, and a ground.
And a ground.
Because the reason they changed it is that neutral, in some dryers, that neutral is actually carrying current. Light bulbs or small timer motors and little things. Anyway, something that could potentially short out. And they don't want the safety ground to carry any current under normal conditions.
Well, certainly not.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's really weird because we lost the neutral failed here at my house about 6 months ago.
I've heard of that happening.
The lights would get dim and bright, and I couldn't figure out what in the hell is this about.
Dim on one side of the line, but real bright on the other.
Yeah, of course, it's looking for ground all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know,
trying to balance the load.
You remember my lightning strikes I had?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that it may have been not functional for a while. That may have been what happened to me.
Yeah. That may have been what was burning out your stuff.
That lightning was seeking a ground, and of course, the telephone company uses the electric company's ground, which I didn't know.
Not supposed to.
Tell
I'm
the guy.
Lucky anyway.
Well, We do things a little different in Texas.
Maybe.
But so the light's dimming, and the guy came out and said, my God, this is, you know. And, boy, once he fixed it, everything, well, I lost several little pieces of equipment, like a speaker, little powered speaker that I got by my chair blew the fuse.
Mm-hmm.
The Luann speakers about her chair blew the, you know, several little things happened.
That's because you're trying to run that 110 stuff on 220.
Yeah, it was, and it had no neutral at all, but he fixed it, and it's none of the phones hum anymore, so
really?
I had no idea that,
you're in good shape now.
Yeah, we're in very good shape now. And you're fixing to be back on the ham bands.
Yeah, I don't know, soon, I guess.
Soon. What a deal.
What a deal. I guess
what a deal.
I think there's as many hams as there were. Is that a dying?
It's going back up again now that they have removed the code requirement. It's increasing again.
So I guess, what do those guys talk about? Do they still use them for emergency?
There was a lot going on during the hurricane.
Was it?
Some of Pam's were the only communication there in and out of some place.
Max, okay, here's the deal. I was an advanced, and that's no longer a thing. So what, did I go back to a general?
Well, you still have your advanced classification, there are more privileges. There's still more privileges for the advanced. What they've done is the written test is more rigorous than it used to be.
Okay.
So you've still got extra and advanced. You just take a stiffer written test to get there.
To get the extra, I would have to
get the extra.
But no code. And that's the thing. I loved code. I passed my 20-word-a-minute code back then, a long time ago, to do the extra, but I never passed the written test. And they gave you a year-long certificate that was good, but during that year, I never took the written test, so I let it lapse. But now you don't even need it.
Now you don't need it. Yep.
Amazing.
So he would be grandfathered in.
He would be grandfathered in, exactly.
Phil,
we talk about fluorescent lights?
Yeah,
that's one of my pet peeves, really.
Well, okay. Fluorescent lights are one of your pet peeves?
No, it's not the fluorescent lights, but people's opinions about them.
Oh, okay.
There's an awful lot of misinformation out there about fluorescent lights that's more than 50 years old. And
that they're efficient?
They are more efficient, yes. But now, some people will tell you that it uses less energy to leave them on all the time than it does to turn them on and off, which isn't so. What happened was, back in the 1950s, literally 50 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Some big corporations with big, big buildings did some actual controlled tests. You know, they do it one way in one building and one way in another building. And they found out it was cheaper to leave the lights on all the time. And the reason is the starters of that day, that every time you cycle that starter, they weren't good for many cycles. They'd burn out. So they would have to pay somebody to replace the starters. And so it was cheaper. So electricity was, spent a kilowatt hour back then.
Yeah, cheap.
It was cheaper to leave the lights on all night than it was to turn them on and off and have those starters go bad.
Makes sense to me.
Not true anymore.
Huh?
Not true anymore.
Well, it never was more energy efficient. It was just cheaper. There are a lot of people who say it's more energy efficient.
Yeah.
It was a maintenance cost.
It was the maintenance cost, and it was cheaper to leave them on.
All right.
Okay. So there's that one knocked out.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm doing a Dan Rossi.
Okay, that's fine. That's good. We love
now,
Dan Rossi.
Yeah.
Another thing is you'll hear is that fluorescent lights use a lot more power when starting than when operating.
Yeah.
Okay. Now on the old fluorescent lights, and there are still some of those around that flicker, you know, and you can hear them click, actually. You hear a clink, clink, clink sound as they come on. And they use about 3 or 4 times as much energy while starting as they do while running. It takes them maybe 5 seconds to start. So if you figure it uses as much energy in 5 seconds starting as it does in 20 seconds running. So if you're going to turn it off and leave it off for only 10 seconds, it uses less energy to leave it on.
Yes.
But if you're going to turn it off even for a minute, it'll use less energy if you turn it off and then turn it back on.
Now, we're talking about the old big bulbs and the old waxy start, the waxy ballasts and all that, the old kind.
Yeah,
the fluorescent light.
And the little starter can, the little round starter can. That's, have you ever taken one of those apart?
I've never taken one apart. I've changed them.
It's a little neon bulb with a bimetal thermostat in the base. And the neon bulb heats the thermostat and it closes.
And turns the light on.
And they have to do that because there are two filaments in a fluorescent tube, one at each end, and you start them with those in series across the line.
Okay.
And then when they get warmed up and start to emit electrons, which is what it's about, then you break that connection. And that does two things. It causes the ballast is a big inductor, and it causes a voltage spike. Ionizes the gas all the way along the tube, and after that, then the filaments are kept warm enough by the current that they're carrying, and it just keeps going after that.
And then you've got light.
Yeah. And by the way, little desk lamps, they haven't gone any other direction. You hold down the switch for a few seconds and then let it up.
Luann's got one of those by her bed,
too.
That's what you're doing. You're connecting those two filaments in series, and then when you let up on the switch, you're breaking the connection.
Yeah, she has one with a round fluorescent globe that's over her bed so she can read, and you have to hold the switch down a minute to get it to come on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the old kind.
That's the old kind.
All right.
I guess they are making those in rapid start now. And rapid start, when they have a little tap on the ballast, and the filament remains connected all the time, and so it's heated. When you turn on your light switch, then the filament is heated up, and it just is able to make. There's enough ionization there. It's able to make connection. It's able to ionize the gas and get it going. But you don't disconnect the heaters. The filaments, they stay connected to the ballast and
all
stay
the time.
Warm all the time.
Okay.
And so they use just a bit more energy than the old kind, but not a whole lot more.
Well, Max, is it time for a question? I'm in the process. I built a garage here 100 years ago, and I'm just now getting around to the lighting, and I'm doing fluorescent lighting. But they said use the ones with the electric ballast.
Yeah.
So because in cold weather, you know, you won't get the dim, like even in our new house, they must have put the old lights, like in the cold weather, the fluorescents come on about half power. You know, they're so dim, you can't see. And so I went to Lowe's, and the guy said, oh, no, get this. And no matter how cold it gets, it'll come on. So what is that?
The old starting kind, you know, that go pink, 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 they won't even start in cold weather. They won't get started, but the new rapid start ones, they will start. They'll come on very dim, but they will start, and they'll warm up in time. They'll warm up over a few minutes.
You're talking about the new electric ballast.
The rapid start.
Well, what's your thing also? Like, I know you're partially sighted, and so am I, and I'm wanting maximum light. How about this narrow, the small tubes versus, you know, they still make the big tubes, and there's a guy around town here that's been in the business for 30-something years, sells light bulbs that actually put out more light. They're a little bit more expensive, but they are bright fluorescent lights. I mean, what do you...
Yeah. I don't know what's with those, but I have seen them. Yeah.
They sell for about like $8 a tube, where a regular light, what is it, about four.
Well, the new small tubes are brighter than the old big tubes.
Yeah,
we just changed the back porch. In fact, Gordon changed the kitchen, and I think George did the back porch. And Luann saw the light on the back porch and went, "My God, you know."
A lot better.
It's 10 times better than it is new tubes and electric ballast. And you can, if you can follow the wire code, you can put the electric ballast in one that had those old wax ballast, those old, you know.
Well, you know, so there are cold weather fluorescents. Dale Levins tell you about them. But I think you can only get them way up in the far north, you know. Other than that, I think you're just going to have to put up with a warm-up time.
Well, Max, what do you think about the new ones? And we have some of these around the house, and they last forever. The fluorescent that you screw into a regular light bulb socket.
Oh, well, I posted on the list the other day. I had heard, and I don't have any direct experience with these because we don't have any of them, but I had heard that they generate a lot of RFI.
Really?
Hams take note, you know, but then somebody came back and said he's a ham and he has those all over his house and he doesn't have any problems. So maybe
the problem I have with them is they're so dang expensive. It takes you, and then if you do get one bad one, like say an N4, I purchased four and one lasted about like a week and burn out. Hmm. Well, who do you take it back to?
Yeah.
You see, and in other words, and I mean, they're like, what, three for... How
prices
many
are coming down, though. The last ones we bought, we got like a bunch, like eight or so for like, I don't know, $12, I think, $10, or 12 at Sam's.
But now Tom Houston was talking about you use the fluorescent floodlights or something.
On my front porch.
Yeah, which I think are neat.
Yeah,
and when Gordon was down here, how long has that been, Phil? It's been
a year almost.
Oh, not a year. Well, when he was here, we went to Lowe's, and I bought some of those fluorescent screw-ins for the dining room and kitchen area. So there would be four of them all total.
And they're still burning.
They're still burning. I've never replaced them. And we were replacing 60-watt bulbs in there coming and going all the time.
I put one in Lou Ann's closet, and it just lasted because she'll leave the light on in the closet. And if I don't think to turn it off, it would never get turned off.
Well,
I'm talking never.
Lou and I like to go antiquing a lot. And one thing I've noticed is all the antique shops, one of their big power expenses is lighting. And they're all changing over to the... Those double helix kind of fluorescent.
And
so that, you know, there must be a significant difference, or they wouldn't be doing it. A business wouldn't be doing it. Yeah.
Well, an interesting thing though, and I'm wondering if it's kind of like not a catch 22 thing, but I put some in, on my garage. Also, I put four light fixtures for outside lighting, but they're enclosed like they're going to be all-weather glow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the rubber gasket and the glass globe, and I said, I'll put those fluorescent lights in there. Well, guess what? These are rated for 60-watt tungsten, and the fluorescent light was too long. Even the little screw-in,
really?
The little curly cues would not fit, and I wonder if they did that for a reason.
It wouldn't fit in there physically.
It would not physically fit in there.
My friend who sells light bulbs for Elliott Electric here in town, Elliott Electric is a supply house. They don't do electrical work. They're an electrical supply house. Sold me a case of bulbs rated at 130 volts.
Oh, high voltage bulbs.
Yeah, high voltage bulbs, and they'll last forever.
They don't put out as much light.
But they'll last forever.
They'll last forever. Yeah, they will, yeah.
They really will. And what do I care for light?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
What a deal.
Max, we better go. We're over time.
Bill.
But we appreciate your expertise in helping us with the... some things that I never would have figured out.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And believe me, one of these days, the UPS guy's going to drive up and say, I've got this really heavy,
really
heavy package for you, because it's heavy. That sucker is...
Boy, I used to have one of those.
It's a big old poundage thing, and if you just need to keep reminding me, and one of these days, I'll do it.
Okay.
All right, Max.
But I never did understand, Max, if you got the linear working or not.
Oh, no, I don't actually have it working. I haven't tried it even yet.
Oh, okay.
I want to, you know, form the capacitors before I even try to it.
That's probably a good idea. Probably just put new ones in, right?
The desk is, there are too many of them to put new ones in. But,
really?
The desk comes first. I got to build the desk.
Desk
and
comes
then
first.
Then I'll be able to get them on the air.
All right, sir. Yeah. We thank you much, and we'll talk with you in a day or two,
okay,
man.
You're welcome.
Thank you, sir. Back more with Blind Handy Man in just a second. Hang on.
Best about the Blind Handyman List. Great place to exchange information and gather ideas. on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the handyman list, and it worked.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman list, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman list, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. A trip to Walmart.
I wonder where the pharmacy is. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your cane is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping your big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is BlindMySmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com. You are listening to The Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Well, that would be me, the birthday boy.
Yes, yeah.
Celebrating old age. I got a compressor on your mic, Tom. Don't you think it sounds good?
Oh, yes.
Your voice is so nice, and I've got it equalized.
Well, thank you, sir.
I forgot to take that off. I was using that very mic the other day.
Very mic.
Well, we had a little storm through here, and we all lost some trees. We had a tree down on the fence, which we cut up. My brother-in-law came over with his chainsaw. We had a blind guy on that uses a chainsaw yet. We haven't had that.
No, but was this on your new fence? I mean, did it tear out more fence?
No, this was a different place on the fence. It was an old fence we built 14 years ago.
But it was a big section.
I called our insurance guy. I called our insurance guy and I said, I've got a tree down. You know, how much you give me for it? And he said, well, did it do any damage? I said, well, I don't know. And anyway, it's nothing. I thought you got something for the loss of a tree.
I've heard that you didn't. Just, in fact, here a day or so ago, yeah, I heard them talking about that on the news.
Zippo, nada.
Yeah, nothing for trees.
Yeah. Well, if the tree hits something, they'll give you something.
Yeah, if it hits something. So I was trying to figure out what I could drag out there to the scene of the crime.
See, if I could have said a tree fell on our fence, but I couldn't even say that because, hell, there wasn't a tree down.
That's and your fence just, there's no trees back there where your fence
no,
went down.
42 foot or so of fence, just the big gust of wind came
up.
And just pushed it over, man.
But, Donald, I think you may have should have learned a lesson there. Don't you think that the garden timbers proposed as opposed to 4x4s?
Yeah, I think the landscape timbers may be lacking a bit, although I have to say, before, when we moved to that house, though,
right,
the fence had landscape timbers in it. God, they'd been there probably been for there, 20 years.
They'd been there at least 20 years.
No, but the reason I mentioned, you remember the house I bought next to you on Allendale? And we talked about Jack Little.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he would pour concrete, you know, he would get a bulldozer to dig a flower bed.
That's right.
And so during one storm, the first year I moved to Lufkin in February, we had a storm. I don't know if y'all remember.
Did.
Semi-tornadoes.
Yeah.
It was every bit almost as bad as this hurricane. This didn't last it long.
That's right.
Everybody's fence on Allendale blew down but mine.
Yeah.
And that's because Jack Little probably had a yard of concrete for every post.
Probably. Did. That's the truth.
Actually, that fence had been up when you moved in that house 23 years, Don Shaw.
And was still
it was
there.
Built in 1976.
Yeah, it was still there.
And was still there. So landscape timbers are fine for
I think part of your fence had fallen down before, because you replaced a bunch of this, Donald.
That's why we replaced the, yeah. The fence was, yeah, because the section started falling. But God dang, that was after, you know, 20 whatever years. Yeah.
23 years. Falling. So, you know, that's...
I don't know how it goes, because we'd seen, they had built a new house just over, just a few blocks from us over on Fagan Street.
Yeah.
And we were driving by this house, and their whole fence was down. And that was like, had just been built like not even a year ago.
Well, so. I mean, think about it. You've got a six-foot-tall wind grabber
standing up there.
But this is fence that you had just rebuilt 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
3 years ago, yeah. Whatever, when you moved in there. Because you redid the entire fence around that yard.
That's
when you
right.
moved in there a little bit, little at a time. Because I remember us talking about how to hang... How do you hang one end of the 2x4 while you're doing the
and
other?
Hold it while you go
hold it while
the
you're
other
doing
end.
The other. And but, we were going to make a thing, and then you found a thing at Lowe's. It was perfect.
Yeah.
But guess what, Donald?
Yeah.
Your house faces the west.
Yeah.
So this wind was knocked down from the fence from the north wind. Think about it. The wind came from in other words, and that's the strongest wind we got here in Lufkin was out of the north.
Before it came, that it would
north.
Be straight from the north, and
And that's the way you're. You know,
and that's the way it
Gangstead
fell.
Lives north of you.
Yeah,
Jim Gangstead, and that's what knocked down your fence.
Yep,
yeah, with that north wind whipping down there. But we were all four pretty lucky.
Oh, we were.
Amen.
Tom and his. In his mobile home out there, rocking and rolling, it never moved, did it?
No.
I bet that was scary, though.
It was scary.
Watching that wind come through, though.
Yeah.
I respect wind now.
Because we lost, I mean, not a few, but we lost hundreds of light poles in Lufkin, Texas over this. That's how bad it was. I mean, we had to be 100 mile an hour.
Wind. Lots of trees down on houses and right in our neighborhood. Just and bunches just of trees down.
Power out all over, just everywhere. But, you know, I'm always knocking Clear Channel Radio, but the Clear Channel radio stations were on during the entire storm.
Really?
They had generators. Kix was on the entire storm, so I will no longer say anything bad about Clear
Never
Channel.
Never went down,
much.
Huh?
Cheap That's channel amazing. Is what they call them. Cheap channel broadcasting. Anyway... thank you, Don Patterson, for coming and joining us. And Don, most of you can't tell, he's lost 20-something pounds.
No, 15.
Oh, yeah. Don Shaw hadn't lost a thing, but we're glad to have him in.
Right.
Thank you, sir. Tom Houston?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I'll leave your mic like that. We'll see you next time on the show number 137. I'm Phil Parr. See you soon. Bye, man, as you picked up his hammer and saw.
Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.